free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.
Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Dr. Christina Jaspers, an art historian and philosopher, is a curator at the Stiftung Deutsche Kinemathek in Berlin. She has curated over 20 exhibitions on modern cinema, including monographic shows on Friedrich Wilhelm Murnau, Martin Scorsese, and Werner Herzog, as well as thematic exhibitions on science fiction film, angels in cinema, and film architecture. Christina teaches at various universities and gives lectures on exhibition theory and practice. Her publications focus primarily on science fiction film, including works on Fritz Lang's Metropolis, and essays exploring topics from future mobility to the collective unconscious in Hannah Arendt and Susan Sontag. We talked to her via video call for this interview. Dr. Christina Jaspers, thank you so much for sitting down with us today.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Today, we will be talking about sci-fi science fiction. And for that, we're going back a little bit to the beginning of filmmaking, German filmmaking to be specific. Fritz Lang's Metropolis from 1927 is a cornerstone, if not at the very heart of the sci-fi genre. So I'd like to start by asking you a few general genre questions and then get a bit more specific. Some other classics of the genre besides Metropolis, such as Die Frau im Mond, were also made in Germany. And Metropolis was the first film which was declared a World Heritage film. Can you give us some background on its importance?
Of course. I really think that Metropolis is one of the most influential films in film history in general. And it's a silent movie, as you said, from 1927. So this movie has a very strong influence on our idea of the mega city of the future. So city with a lot of skyscrapers, the vertically staged traffic, a lot of neon signs. For Ridley Scott, Metropolis was a kind of blueprint, I think, for Blade Runner. So he showed the movie to his team and adopted many details. And also George Lucas used the female robot for Metropolis for the design of the robot of C-3PO. So there are some more recent films like The Fifth Element and Till Matrix, I think. There are a lot of movies inspired by the aesthetics of Metropolis. So the film deals with social injustice, the relationship between humans and machines, you could say the manipulation by artificial intelligence in a way. So all these topics are still relevant today.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I mean, with such strong beginnings, now the genre is a little bit of a no-go for German creatives. And as an expert, and I know this is a bit of a sweeping question, when and maybe also why, besides budgetary reasons, did the genre lose its footing in Germany, in your opinion?
In the 20s, Germany was very famous for the film architecture, or you would say the production design, and the special effects. And they built very elaborated sets in Babelsberg. And maybe, as you know, Metropolis was so expensive that the UFA was nearly bankrupted. So the filmmakers in that time really thought big, so in the way of thinking big. And after World War II, this was not longer appropriate. And in the 50s, you know, the Heimat film boomed, so the situation changed. But then in the 70s, Rainer Werner Fassbinder made his, I think, groundbreaking Welt am Draht, World on Wire. And in the 80s, Roland Emmerich started his career in Germany with movies like the Archinoa-Prinzip, the Noah Ark principle, before he started his career in Hollywood. And in the 90s, Wim Wenders made Bis ans Ende der Welt, Until the End of the World. So all these were very innovative productions, I think. And now we have Tim Filbaum with Hell and Tides. And there are also a lot of international co-productions. Mm-hmm. I think this is also an important part of sci-fi in Germany. So like Matrix 3 was shot in Babelsberg, also the Cloud Atlas.
Yeah.
Now they're shooting the second prequel of Hunger Games, and the production design is made by Uli Hanisch. So science fiction films are often very expensive. I know you don't want to talk about budget, but this makes it so difficult outside of Hollywood. And I think the genre never completely disappeared in Germany.
As a side note, I was also interested in if you have a take on why the change happened from being a cinematic genre in the beginning and then to a also very strong television genre. I mean, I'm thinking about obviously Raumpatrouille Orion and Star Trek starting in the 60s. Do you think that has also to do with the production design or budget or the way maybe the stories can be told in a different way?
I think the genre getting more diverse in a way, so and more dystopian. So in the beginning, it was an utopian view on the future, and especially in the 80s with movies like Blade Runner, which established a shabby look, very dusty, very dirty. So like this cyberpunk genre in a way, it's more dirty and dystopian. And in the last 20 years, we got more post-apocalyptic scenario. But when we're looking to this TV movies, more impact in social issues and the society questions. And they're maybe not so expensive. This is important also. And they're more looking in an international, global way.
Now let's do a little bit of a deep dive. You once said that about the genre, you can often say this about science fiction. The films tell us an incredible amount about the time in which they were made. How would you describe the current themes in sci-fi? And you already mentioned some modern filmmakers and the influence Metropolis had on them, but obviously, Francis Ford Coppola just made a new movie called Metropolis. So do you think that that will continue in a way, that Metropolis is still the go-to reference or for modern-day filmmakers?
Yes, I think so. I think there is, it's kind of deep in our mind. It's very deep in our mind, and we couldn't delete it again. So when we're talking about the city of the future, we always have this kind of city, and then we could destroy it in a way, but it's part of our collective memories. And I see a lot of connections to Metropolis, also in, as I said, cyberpunk or anime movies again. So it's always quoted, and I think it's helpful in a way, but it would also be nice to find a new kind of story and new thinking of a more positive way, I think, to set new cities in the future.
Metropolis was not set in space, but Die Frau im Mond was very much set in space. About 10 years ago, you curated a big exhibition, and part of it was about women in space. And there's been quite a few films lately that have picked up this trope and storyline again. A lot of them international films. I think the last German one that sort of went into that direction was Tides, that came out in 2021. Can you hypothesize a little bit about why that is such a strong story or plot that filmmakers keep coming back to?
Yeah, Woman in Space. So Frau im Mond, Woman in the Moon from 1928, is about an astronomy student, which is very curious and completely fearless on her first lunar expedition. And the screenplay was written by a woman, by Fritz Lang's wife, Thea von Harbou. So maybe this is important. In reality, it was 1963 that a woman flew into space for the first time. It was a Russian cosmonaut, Valentina Tereshkova. Yeah, maybe you follow the news this year. In 2025, the first German woman flew into space, Rabia Rock. So 62 years after Tereshkova, and nearly 100 years after Woman in the Moon.
Wow.
So this is a reality. But back to fiction. So the science fiction genre is, I think, very a masculine genre. It's created by men, made for men in a way. And because not only the directors, but also the screenwriters are mostly male. So maybe that's the point why you find not so many complex female hero characters, I would say.
Yeah.
When women play the leading role, they are often portrayed as feminine robots or the AI, think of Ex Machina or Her. So like a male projection screen for the audience in a way. Or it deals with issues of reproduction and motherhood. And
quote unquote, she brings something back from space. That's also like then veers more into the horror trope or the drama trope.
Absolutely. It starts with Alien. Yeah, it's so impressive. Mm. And so I think it was really a big step when women were first seen in leadership roles on the bridge of a spaceship. I think this was really important. Yeah. And then they usually combine scientific qualifications with emotional intelligence. So very typical in a way, female, question mark. And in the 70s, there were several missions already led by women in DEFA productions, such as in Eolomea and also in Staub der Sterne, in the Dust of the Stars from the 70s. So I think these were very important milestones.
Through the years when Germany was a divided country, there were quite distinct styles of sci-fi films in the GDR and the BRD. Again, a bit of a sweeping question. Can you just very roughly describe the similarities and the differences you see between these two styles of work?
Unlike the Western dystopias, DEFA films were mostly utopias. So the aim was to create a positive image of the future. This is, I think, very important. Yeah. And such films like Der Schweigende Stern, The Silent Star from Kurt Metzig, 1960, made use of an enormous artistic freedom. So they go more into fantasy than science fiction in a way. And similar to the Star Trek series, the multi-ethnic crew plays an important role in these movies. So the crew were mainly combined by actors and actresses from the socialist countries, but they wanted to create a positive image of the future global community. Also, as in the Western television series like Raumpatrouille Orion, the focus is on external enemies, but also on interaction within the team and the social issues. So, yeah, this starts in that time.
Talking about the dichotomy, for me, it seems like there's also two types of sci-fi movies. Like there's the gory, shock sci-fi movies like Alien, like more dystopian, and then let's call it more the art house fare, like Metropolis. Both Metropolis or 2001 Space Odyssey. Given that European and most definitely German films are more art house focused, do you think that now with different financing players in the game, although as we know, film and TV industries in a serious flux situation, there might be a chance that more, or let's call them bigger sci-fi films might see the light of day in Germany from German filmmakers?
Hopefully. A lot has happened in the recent years, I think. So think of the success of series like Dark. And I find it very interesting that in Germany, the line between sci-fi and fantasy or horror doesn't seem to be so strict. So maybe that had something to do with the tradition of fairy tales or gothic stories or so.
Yeah.
But I think these kind of mixed genres or the hybrid genres like science fiction and drama and thriller and horror or mystery, I think this is an important direction. And there were also some productions about time traveling with a more philosophical dimension like Dark, but also like Cloud Atlas and others. And for me, the landscapes are always very important in European science fiction movies.
Yeah.
So maybe you remember the landscapes in Automata, which was filmed in the Spanish Sierra Nevada. This is Antonio Banderas. Or the beautiful Never-Ending North Sea in Tides by Tim Filbaum. So I think these landscapes give you the atmosphere or the sense of strangeness and desolation and so on. Yeah, in the last years, there were also some elaborate series on AI, like Real Humans from Sweden or Human from the UK. So maybe this could also be a direction for German productions too, I think, because it's so contemporary.
Yeah. And it was interesting when I talked to Tim Filbaum last week and I asked him, you know, what his biggest learning was from Hell, because it was his first feature film. And he said that the restriction is actually, you know, the budgetary restriction is actually a good thing, because otherwise, he said, you know, I probably would have tried to copy a lot of the films that I really like from the genre. But because we didn't have the budget, we had to think outside the box and see what we could do with the equipment we had and the budget we had. And so we had a very distinct look and very distinct story that we had to tell and could
tell.
Yeah,
I know some storyboards and some drawings for Hell. They're very beautiful. Just mm-hmm. he had a really strong concept. So maybe that's more important than the budget, yeah.
It was very funny because I talked to Markus Förderer as well, the cameraman. Mm-hmm. He mentioned that because of the way they filmed, they had mirrors and lights. So to get that sort of flare of the sun. But he said what they didn't really count on was that they would be getting sunburn. Mm-hmm. So because he and Tim, they were in that bright light all the time. And he said, yeah, that was not so much fun. Going back to your earlier quote about sci-fi movies, a lot of the time they are also a tool for sharing political and important messages with audience members and can convey many important ideas through metaphors, themes, and haunting imagery. Given the important impact the films of the genre can have, can you maybe give us a few of the themes that you deem the most important and also maybe why there is a misconception about the genre sometimes, because I think a lot of people don't see sort of between the lines of the films.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very good question. I find it very interesting to see what kind of collective fears or desires are articulated mm-hmm. in science fiction film, and why are there so many dystopias? So for me, the dystopias in particular are very ambivalent because think of movies like Minority Report or The Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. They deal with totalitarianism, with dictatorial systems, but all the gadgets that we see are looking very cool. And after watching the movie, we want to have it. So I think the great thing of science fiction is that it allows us to think in terms of alternatives, or we can play through how something could be different. And that's a great opportunity. And perhaps it's a big misunderstanding to believe that only dystopias tell exciting stories. And that could be the real challenge to tell a good utopia in a way. So maybe we should think about, I don't know, a new Shangri-La or something, especially in current times. So, you know, Shangri-La is this paradise from things to come. So, yeah, maybe that's a wish.
and also, I'm sort of mixing formats now, but I remember reading a short story collection by Ray Bradbury, The Golden Apples of the Sun, where he picks up on that new frontier space and a lot of stories about rockets and people going into space and what that means. And I think that's something also that's been a bit lost, you know, like, as you say, like, what are the new opportunities that could be out there in a positive way, you know, starting over, starting fresh? Yeah, that would be very interesting if the genre would go that way. And now I have a few questions about you and your work. You've been working as a writer and curator for many years. You've been specializing in sci-fi and Metropolis, and possibly some other themes as well. What are the biggest changes that you've noticed in your work in the industry?
Yeah, I would say since the 2010s, the action films shifted a little bit back towards more philosophical questions on the human condition in a way. At the same time, the perspectives have become more global. So I think of movies like Neil Blomkamp's District 9, for example. And on the other hand, the CGI technology has changed a lot. So now we have another possibility to simulate unknown worlds. So this changed also. And today, many stories deal not with a distant future. So Metropolis played 100-year distance. But now we have a lot of stories in the near future. And I think like series like Black Mirror or so. And this makes it more relevant for our society. So maybe this is a new impact.
It's time to reveal your favorite, well, maybe German, sci-fi film. Do you have a favorite? I think is probably the first question. And if you have one, can you maybe give us a little bit of background why it's your favorite?
Yeah, this is really, really a complicated question. So I have seen Fassbinder's Welt am Draht some weeks ago again, and like the stylized look very much. But yeah, so I like movies that are a little bit weird. And there is a movie by Werner Herzog called The Wild Blue Yonder. There is the actor Brad Dourif, and he stands on an empty crossroad and claims to be an alien from a distant galaxy. And this mm-hmm. works in a way. So I like this very much. So sometimes the fantasy is only in your mind. And I think mm-hmm. science fiction, yeah, offers us a kind of thought experiment. And in science fiction film, anything is possible. So that's what I liked on this genre.
Okay. Which sci-fi film that you've watched was the biggest surprise for you? Something that you didn't expect?
Yeah, there is a complete crazy film by Ari Folman, The Congress, from 2030.
Oh,
do you know
yeah.
it? It's based on a story by Stanislav Lem, and it cleverly combines animation and live action. And it was shot in Berlin, and the Tempelhof Airport provides a fantastic futurist backdrop. So this was really a strange, surprising sci-fi movie. So I really enjoyed a movie, this is a bit more conventional, Maria Schrader's Ich bin dein Mensch. So it was for me also a surprise because this movie had a great lightness and it's wonderful how the roles are reversed here. So the male robot becomes yeah. a projection screen. So yeah, for me, this was also a wonderful, wonderful surprise.
And finally, you've written extensively and curated exhibitions. Can you tell us what you're currently working on?
Well, in 2027, it marks the 100th anniversary of Metropolis. So is that not a reason to think about it? Mm-hmm. Now I'm still working on a project about queer cinema. And there, too, the science fiction genre really has a lot of catching up to. Because if we understand sci-fi as a way of thinking about how we want to live in the future, then I think it's high yeah. time that the genre become more diverse and more queer.
Those are great last words for this podcast. Thank you so much for sitting down with us today. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much to you.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films, the National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
Free audio post-production. Biophonic.com.